You know, South Park has had its ups and downs over the years, but it'll always have an important place in my heart for giving me what I think is the greatest line of description I've ever heard. Your face looks like someone tried to put out a forest fire with a screwdriver.
It's a horrible thing to say.
And you know what? I heard that a decade ago. Exactly. I heard that line over a decade ago, and I still have no idea what it means, but I'm captivated by the image.
Yeah, me too.
Welcome back to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Die of Mistress. And this is our first show of the new year. So a happy new year to everybody out there.
And if you're standing up, I'd like you to sit down. If you're sitting down, consider lying down. Because I'm going to tell you something shocking. Here on the AVOD, the world's only audio-only vodcast about genre film, we're going to do something we've never done before. That's right. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about movies, horror movies, that are currently in theatrical release.
Oh my God.
The bridge?
Quite a way to start off 2009.
The bridge they thought would never be crossed has been crossed.
Has been crossed. And then set on fire and sent to hell.
The Dive Mistress and I each saw a different horror movie this past week, and we are going to interview each other about our experiences seeing them, because for really reasons far too complicated to get into, we were not able to see the same film or see each other's films after seeing different films.
It's not complicated at all.
Actually, you know what? It's not.
You just couldn't get to the one that I saw, and I didn't want to see the one you saw.
See, I was trying to keep that quiet, but thank you very much.
My bad.
Okay. All right. But before we get started on that, I would like to actually ask the Dive Mistress about something. I saw that you recently saw the movie Devil's Chair on your blog.
Yes, I did. It was a gift.
Cool. So, I saw that movie a couple of months ago, and I did not get around to mentioning it earlier, but there's something I want to ask you about the film, and it's this. And, oh, by the way, before I ask this question, anyone who hasn't seen the film Devil's Chair or read the Dive Mistress's really excellent write-up on it might want to turn away or close their ears for the next couple of minutes, because we're going to be massively spoiling the events of the film. Yeah. All right.
Big spoiler alert.
Huge spoiler alert. So here's my question about the film The Devil's Chair, a film that my own blog post about the film is titled Devil's Chair is the worst film I've seen since High Tension, which leads to my main problem with the film, which is, and this is what I'm going to ask to both you, the Dive Mistress, and you, our listener. Has there ever been a movie where at the end of the movie you discover that the events of the film did not actually happen? That was a good movie.
No.
Because it is my suspicion.
I don't think so.
That is, in every case, you know, the complete kiss of death to a film. Would you say that was a fair generalization to make?
I guess so. I don't know. I like to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
That it is in fact possible to make a movie where at the end you realize, oh, it was all a dream. It didn't actually happen. But generally it just ends very badly for everybody.
So you see where I object to it, in that It honestly, to me, has always felt like, oh, well, we've just decided to waste your time. Doesn't it feel a little that way to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can see where they were going with the Devil's Chair, and it was an interesting idea, and I said this in my blog, just poorly executed.
Right.
Because, I mean, it keeps drawing attention to the fact that it is made up.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the thing
is... That's a bit...
The character barely has a line where he isn't either insulting me, the audience, for watching a horror film, or talking about how none of the events on screen are actually happening, and they're an incredibly cliched horror film.
Yeah.
I don't know why they thought that was a good idea.
I don't know.
Hey, audience, only a moron would watch this movie.
Keep watching and find out what happens next.
Even though I've already told you, everybody dies.
Yeah, right at the start.
Yeah. You see how that wouldn't...
Although I said that too. I'm like, because you see all the deaths right at the start of the film. Yeah. They watch the movie thinking how they're going to get there to that. I mean, because what's happening presently in the middle of the film, there's really no way they can get to the ending that they showed at the beginning.
No, never.
And then they do.
Yeah.
And then you realize that you've just been fleeced.
Lied to the entire... Although, to be fair, he never really gets to the beginning of the film. That was one of the things that bothers me. He never actually gets to the beginning of the film. And
well, no, because when he finally switched into reality, he's, like, actually finished everything.
Yeah.
It's like, that actually probably would have been a lot more interesting to watch than what we just saw. And when he made up. Really, I think the point is that he's got a very bad imagination.
Yeah, and hair's great. Let's be told a story by a character who doesn't have a good imagination. There's like 8 different things about the concept of the movie The Devil's Chair that should have tipped off the filmmakers of The Devil's Chair that it wasn't a good idea to continue making The Devil's Chair, and none of that tipped them off somehow.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a puzzler. Also, can I just point out what I thought was the biggest plot hole in the film by a pretty wide margin?
Okay.
And I know that's something I love to do, maybe a little too much, but bear with me. The whole film is predicated around this idea that a mental patient didn't actually murder his girlfriend. She was taken to hell by an evil chair. Okay, so
no,
right away,
just
you know what?
With a blood drinking demon.
I should have been tipped off, you know, by that premise. But anyway, you know, part of this, I admit to some culpability. Okay, some.
But it's not even that though. I think you're kind of you're going too far with that statement because it revolves around she sat in the chair and then died, but she wasn't taken to hell. Because he sat in the chair too and then like went crazy, so basically was, I guess, possessed by some evil spirit in the chair and then killed her. So his excuse is that the chair in fact did it, where it was just him possessed by an evil spirit from the chair.
Well, it's questionable whether
later on people actually do go to hell from sitting in the chair, so then that kind of throws
she was never killed. Her body was never found. Because
made explicit, because in the title sequence, she's running away.
Yeah.
She's still inside what you're supposed to believe is the asylum.
That's true.
So it's actually never made clear that her body was never found. You have to figure that out on your own.
You're right. That's absolutely true. What I found very interesting about that part of the movie, actually, is that they do put that clue that none of it actually happened, because in his memory, she disappears from the chair the way characters would go on to do later, but then they do show clips of her, like, running away. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Later events in the film...
people disappear from the chair until later.
So the premise of the film is that these characters go with him to the Devil's Chair Asylum. You know, Saint, you know, whoever of the Devil's Chair. Right? They go...
That's not the name.
I don't know what the asylum is called. Okay, I don't know what the asylum was called. That's not the important part, okay? The important part is they go to this asylum to confront him with the fact that the chair doesn't actually kill people, so he shouldn't be insane anymore.
Or no, it's just that it doesn't in fact exist.
Yes.
No, you're right.
I'm getting to a point.
Now I'm getting confused.
Yeah, yeah. you've just revealed the twist, whereas I'm going to make a point. In the story he's telling, they're taking him to this asylum because they want to prove that the chair doesn't actually kill people, so it's just a thing that happened and he shouldn't let it ruin his life, which is all well and good, right? But there's another twist in there. Yeah, the twist at the end. But then it turns out that the real reason
that's the twist before the twist. Okay, I should just stop interrupting.
Let me finish synopsizing, then you tell me where I'm wrong, which I'm sure will be in many places. Okay?
Okay.
No, then the doctor who took him there turns out the real reason that he brought him was not because he thinks the chair isn't real, but because he knows the chair is real and he's been researching and he wants to get some information about the chair from the guy who he has brought back to the asylum, right? Is that a fair description?
No. The doctor knows the chair is real because he found the journal of the doctor who built the chair.
Exactly.
And so I'm not entirely sure why he brought the crazy guy back to the asylum.
Actually, in the plot, there is no reason for him to do that.
No, just that he wanted to feed him to the chair, feed him to the demon. Because the chair takes you to another dimension where there's a demon that kind of looks like a really big cockroach that's going to drink your blood.
Exactly. Thank you. That's the part I was getting to. Now, but here's the problem, right? Now, the reason that no one takes any precautions within the story he tells about, you know, against going to an isolated location with a guy who probably murdered his girlfriend in the most brutal fashion imaginable is that within the story he tells, the evil doctor knows that the chair is real and he didn't kill anyone. But then it turns out in the film's, I'll use the word retarded, final twist that it has all been a completely fake story he's told, and he murdered all the people who came to the hospital with him.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's a murderist, a mass murdering rapist, which thanks for that, filmmakers.
Yes.
We really appreciate the rape. But anyway. Go.
No, I was going to say, because part of it is, I mean, even though he's telling a story, he's making it all up, he is taken back to the asylum with the doctor and his assistants.
He is.
But that part's true.
That part is true. But my point was
that... It just doesn't make any sense, because when is he telling the story? Over what time span is the story being told? Is it like just the 5 minutes that it takes, or, you know, maybe the half hour, whatever it takes for him to get back to the asylum? Because you could argue that all of the events up to when they reach the asylum and they sit in the chair are in fact actually taking place.
Not exactly when they sit in the chair, because the twist is
the
chair doesn't exist. Yeah.
The twist is there's no chair. So, but I just like, I don't know, because it's hard to divorce what is true from what is, well, I mean, it's not hard to divorce what's true from what's fake, but there's a point where you're kind of like, this is all hindsight, right? But
yeah,
I don't know. It's not very well told. He's a bad storyteller.
But my real problem is the
dies off screen, and that's
if
the real tragedy.
The doctor,
here.
Right? If the doctor, you know, knows that there's an evil devil chair that he wants to feed him to, it makes sense to take this guy to an isolated hospital. But if, as in what really happened, not the story being told by Nick, the main character, is that he actually is a murderer who murdered his girlfriend and they're trying to cure him, I don't understand why they go to an isolated location without any protection whatsoever from the murderer therewith.
Well, and maybe it's because Nick sticks to his story of the murderous chair, like within reality. He never goes back on his word and never takes responsibility for his girlfriend's death. He believes that the chair killed her, and that's a story he's been telling for 4 years. So then this other doctor comes along, and he's like, I'm going to write a book about this guy's case, and I'm going to help him with his psychosis. So I'm going to take him back to the scene of the crime and show him there was, in fact, no chair, and this is going to help him on the road to recovery.
Oh, that's...
So maybe he thinks that this guy really isn't a threat.
See, but the thing is...
Because he's
his
so
theory,
deluded.
The doctor's theory is always that the guy actually did kill his girlfriend. Right?
Yes.
So
but he's so deluded.
No matter how
idea that he didn't do it, that maybe he does. He's not perceived as being a threat.
But no matter how deluded you are,
when he's told there's no chair, you would think that.
That's my point exactly. Like, if ever a guy is going to have a psychotic break. It's after being told that after being shown definite proof that he is a murderer and the chair doesn't exist. And that's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean, it had a lot of.
Yeah. The motivation of the doctors doesn't make sense at all, because maybe you wanted to confront him with the lack of a chair. That's fine. But in all likelihood, that's going to lead to him freaking out. So why not bring
so we just have a doubly. It's a doubly bad story. It's poorly written on the part of Nick's fantasy and poorly written on the part of what's supposed to be taking place in reality.
So what you're saying is both Nick is a terrible storyteller and the people who wrote the movie are terrible storytellers.
I think that's what I'm saying.
You know what? This is the first explanation I have heard for really truly explains the film, The Devil's Chair. Let me thank you very much for sorting that out in my mind. So
you are,
I think,
very welcome.
If there's one if there's one lesson we want people to take away from our conversation about the movie The Devil's Chair, it's that they should not watch the movie The Devil's Chair.
Right. Even if you're a huge Matt Berry fan like I am.
Yeah, still. So The Devil's Chair is probably going to come up again next week, right?
That's right. When we talk more about Matt Berry.
In the show that made him a star.
That's right, our favorite.
Yeah, next week we are doing a special full show edition celebrating the TV show Dark Place, which will... in all likelihood, just be us reciting lines from Dark Place to each other and then laughing at remembering the funny thing that had happened.
So if you don't know what that is, then Google it right now.
Google it and become happy.
Exactly.
You know what? I may even learn how to strip audio off of things so I can open the show with a quote from Dark Place.
Oh.
Apparently that would make the dive mistress happy. Okay, so
it doesn't take much.
It really doesn't. So before we move on to our main topic, I just want to point out one weird thing that I noticed after our Wishmaster conversation we had in It's a Very Wishmaster Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this show the movie Wishmaster is strange because although it completely lost this underlying idea in the subsequent Wishmaster movies, the first film Wishmaster's big deal was that it was reuniting horror icons for the first time all in one place.
That's true. I never thought of that.
Yeah, because it was...
they're all there. It's got Robert Englund is there.
Yep.
Tony Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Kane Hodder.
And it's narrated by Angus Scrimm, the tall man from Phantasm.
Really?
Yeah, that's who narrated that movie.
The movie's narrated?
Yeah, the opening...
I didn't even notice.
The opening spiel at the beginning explaining what a gin is. My God.
Right, damn.
Yeah. So it's like, except for not having Brad Dourif in it, it basically had all the horror icons of the day.
Damn, why wasn't that Dourif there?
And of course, you can't do a, there's no way to represent Leatherface or Michael Myers, because they were all played by, you know, a massive amount of different people, and no one is really associated with those characters.
That's true.
Yeah, but the thing is,
why would you leave Brad Dourif out of the party? That's not nice.
I know. They had that big party scene. You could have just got Brad Dourif in there for one day. He could have been serving canapés or something. And it's weird. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Ted Raimi was in it.
I still see he's my favorite Raimi. Who was he? I feel like I should remember him.
You know, I don't remember who he was. I'm basing this on the Internet Movie Database. But, yeah, because, like, it says, oh, he was character Ed Finney. Who was that? You know, I have no idea. Maybe he's the guy who got drunk at the beginning and released the gin. Who knows? What's funny is, like, that was the big... Could be. That was the big thing of the movie in Wishmaster, that it was this big, you know, horror cameo fest, yet... That didn't happen at all in the next three Wishmaster movies, which just completely straightforward told the story of a genie that liked to ironically kill people.
So worth watching or no?
You know, I haven't seen any of them.
Oh, so you don't even know.
I know entirely because I have a couple of VHS tapes that have previews at the beginning because I bought them from Blockbusters that have previews of upcoming Wishmaster movies.
Jesus, it's like my old tape of Warlock.
Yeah.
Trailers on that. Damn.
Yeah. I really get the feeling we're now going to do a Wishmaster special, aren't we?
I don't know. We'll see. We got a lot on the table.
We do have a lot on the table, but we do have a whole year worth of shows to fill up.
I suppose that's true.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
We don't have to talk about that right now.
Of course not. Oh, one last thing before we move on. I'd like to remind everyone that 24 is back, and it is the world's greatest dumping ground for nerd-friendly casting. So if you love genre film at all, check out the new season of 24. Because in the first four episodes alone, they had Colm Feore, John Billingsley, the Doctor from Enterprise, Peter Wingfield, Mythos from Highlander, Kurtwood Smith, Clarence Boddicker from RoboCop, and of course, Tony Goddamn Todd.
Oh my God.
It was a casting palooza.
Still not gonna make me watch it. Still not gonna watch.
You're not gonna watch?
Even so, no. I watched that one season of 24, and that's it.
Yeah, and why did you watch the nerd casting?
True.
Try to deny that's the only reason you watched. You can't.
I'm not denying it.
Okay. No, but I mean, that season had both RoboCop and Warlock in it.
Damn the Warlock.
And having Tony Todd on this season almost makes this season better, but it hasn't yet. So the question is it going to, you know, take it up that next notch by having someone equal to Tony Todd in there? You know, getting Robert Englund in there, Brad Dourif or something. Because that's what it would take.
See, it's got to be someone real special. I would watch it for Robert Englund or Brad Dourif, probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's got to be somebody big. Like, they can't just throw Adam Baldwin in there and assume you're going to watch.
Well, maybe.
Maybe for Adam Baldwin. Okay. That is good information to have for the producers of television. Of course, you don't watch Chuck, and he's on that every week.
Trying to get me to watch their show? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Just on this one.
You know what? I think that ratings have to be based in some level on an arbitrary judgment. You know, at some point they have to extrapolate based on, you know, a small sample. And if that sample was just you, I think we would get much better television.
Oh, hell yes, we would.
Yeah, that might have been my biggest attempt to flatter you ever. So how did that work?
It worked.
Not bad? Okay.
I'm not really sure how that's flattering, but it worked.
That if you decided all of what would be on television, it would be better. I think that's flattering, isn't it?
That is true.
Okay.
That's flattering. Like, yeah, I have really good taste.
That was the message.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't.
Taste.
You have terrible taste.
Crap I like to watch.
But it's entertaining terrible taste, and that's what counts.
It is. Entertainingly terrible.
Okay. I think we're ready to move on to the main event for today.
All right. Let's do it.
And the main event for today is the movies that we went out and saw. So first up, the movie I went out and saw. That movie, The Unborn.
See, I had really no desire to go see that one.
No.
I figured I got enough from the trailer, I could put the movie together.
Please, you know what? Before I start talking about it and, you know, spoiling what you think, I would like to hear you attempt to put the movie together from the trailer. So please, put that movie together.
So there's this girl, right?
Okay.
Odette
Justman, star of Cloverfield.
Had a twin brother.
Yes.
Who died in the womb.
Also true.
And now she's being haunted by him.
Okay.
For reasons unknown. And so she sees a bunch of creepy stuff, freaks out a little. There's like a little kid who follows her around, and that's her dead twin brother. Not too sure why he appears as a child, since she's an adult.
And he died before being born.
Died before being born. So maybe, you know, something happened in her past. It's a bit shady. Something about her parents or the doctor.
The doctor?
And then it ends. It's going to be bloodless. Everyone's fully clothed. Very little violence. A lot of tension, maybe. Hugely anticlimactic. Am I getting everything right here? It is PG-13, after all.
It is PG-13, and I think we both agree that there is no such thing.
No follow through.
That there is no such thing as PG-13 horror. I mean, that's just goes without saying.
It's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah, it really is. But you're way off on many key points.
Oh, no.
I know. Surprising, isn't it? But those are, and to be fair,
it is surprising.
I saw a trailer for the film, and I was left with the exact same impression that you were about the film. So it's not like you were in bad company in being wrong. No, but the film deviates from your expectations in several key ways. First off, despite the title of the film, despite the way many characters act in the film, and despite the key line in the trailer, can you be haunted by someone who was never born? The girl is not being haunted by the ghost of her dead fetal twin.
Who is she being haunted by?
The ghost that follows her around is the form of her great uncle, her grandmother's twin brother, who died in Auschwitz.
What?
But, and are you ready for this? She's not being haunted by him either.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Are the convolutions beginning?
Yes.
No, she's not being haunted by him either. In what can be only described as one of the most confusing plot twists ever, she's being haunted by a ghost named a Dibbuk from Jewish folklore, which is, according to the film, a soul that has been unable to get into the afterlife and now just hangs around trying to either take over a baby in the womb so it can be reborn, or take over the corpse of someone who died. So the backstory is that the grandmother, I'm not going to get into all of this, but the grandmother's twin brother was killed at Auschwitz by Dr. Mengele. and his body was possessed by one of these Dybbuks, and then knowing that the... This is where it gets a little confusing. And then knowing that it wasn't her brother, she convinced the other children with her in the concentration camp to help her murder this possessed little boy. And now her family is being haunted by the Dybbuk, who, despite the fact that it could go anywhere, has elected to try and be reborn specifically through this family. And the significance of her dead brother is that it had possessed her brother in the womb, but then the brother had one of those things where it got choked by an umbilical cord in while a fetus and died in the womb. Is that incredibly confusing?
Wow.
Or is it just me?
Not at all.
What you expected. And can I just point...
But isn't any good.
No,
that's
God, no. No, 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 no. Actually, I would just like to point out the line that is going around the internet that I guess you haven't heard from the film. The big line that is like the laugh line from the internet. And I'll give it this. It is kind of absurd. And beyond absurd, it's like... A line that taken in context is only mildly offensive or questionable, but still a little. But taken out of context is just, I can't believe someone didn't look at this in a script and say, "Whoa, Nelly." And that is the grandmother's line to her granddaughter when she has come to the grandmother for help about stopping the Dybbuk. The grandmother says... You must complete what was begun at Auschwitz.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus!
That actually happens.
Holy shit!
And you're wondering, how did that get into the movie? Because in crap. Context, it's barely justifiable. But out of context.
No, not even then. No one should ever say that.
I know.
Ever.
Thank you.
I don't care what the context is.
Yes, there's no context under which that is an acceptable statement. And that's what makes the next thing I'm going to say so funny. So I've told you about all of this, the Auschwitz stuff, right? Now, what would you say if I then told you that the Auschwitz storyline has nothing to do with the plot of the film?
What?
Nothing.
But you just said she tried to kill her twin brother at Auschwitz because
I know, but my point is,
this ghost. Yeah,
oh, absolutely. It is that's where really the background of the film was set. What I'm saying is the fact that the background of the film was set at Auschwitz has no effect on the plot. Like, what I'm saying is it didn't need to be set during the Holocaust for anything that happens in the film. Had they grown up in Ohio and her brother died of polio, and then been possessed by this ghost, and then she killed the brother, it would have been the exact same movie.
Wouldn't change anything.
Yeah. The only reason they needed it to be Auschwitz is so that the little boy ghost, and by the way, why does the Dybbuk continue appearing as that little boy ghost when that will have no significance to anyone except for the grandmother? Good. I'll tell you why. Because at Auschwitz, twins were experimented on by Dr. Joseph Mengele, and one of the experiments he did was trying to dye brown eyes blue. So that's why they do the Auschwitz thing. That's why they leverage the frigging Holocaust for this crappy PG-rated horror movie. So that their little ghost...
Can learn more about the horrors of Mengele?
No, so not even that. Just so the little ghost can have creepy, chalky blue eyes. That's it.
Okay.
And do you want to hear the kicker?
Weird.
They were fraternal twins. It was a sister and brother. Mengele only cared about identical twins because those are the ones who are useful for research. The whole thing's a plot hole.
Jesus.
So.
Wow, I'm like doubly glad I didn't see it.
You know, you should be really happy.
Why
you didn't.
Why would you see this movie in the first place?
I don't have a good answer for that. No, I had a friend who really wanted to go and see it, and I'm like, you know what? I haven't seen enough horror movies in theaters. I was scared off by mirrors. You know, from seeing not horror bad. Movies in theaters for a while. So, yeah, I was... Yeah, playing Jack 24, because that's who he plays. And while I'm fine with Jack 24 when he's, you know, shooting people for the government, when he's like... battling mirror ghosts, it's somehow less compelling.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry. But you know what? I'm not trying to get you to not see mirrors. If you want to see mirrors, by all means, see mirrors. But
is it PG-13?
It is. Although I hear the DVD is unrated, so I'm sure they shot a lot of extra gore. Because let's not forget, it was made by the person who made my most hated film before the existence of Devil's Chair, High Tension.
Oh, Tom. Yeah.
Because there's
really?
Yeah, same guy. And there's nothing
really?
The French love more than hyper gore.
Not these days, anyway.
Okay. But yeah, it's an Alexandre Aja film.
Oh, well, maybe I'll see what I can find.
Check out the video and then we will discuss. Okay, so I think we've hopefully dissuaded anyone from ever seeing The Unborn. Because apparently that's now our goal here at the AVOD, to dissuade people from seeing genre films.
Well, no, it's a public service announcement. There are lots of horror movies out there to choose from, and we just want to help you make an informed decision.
Maybe once in a while we could tell them about a good one, though, that they should see.
Well, we have to see it first.
You're right. They would have to make one.
We would. We will.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's the plan. Which reminds me, we did promise to write Naked and Violent, so we should probably do that.
We did promise, and I'm sure our listener has been eagerly anticipating.
Awaiting the, what we are no doubt plans to read excerpts from Naked and Violent on the AVOD. Because that'll go over like a lead balloon. All right. Now, we have discussed the terrible film I saw. Was the film you saw also terrible?
Yes. I really want to say no.
You want to say no.
Really,
what is the film?
Terrible. Okay, I went to go and see My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Okay, first off, before you start, how does the 3D work? Like, do you have to wear glasses or do you buy glasses? What's the deal?
Yeah, you get these special glasses. They give you the glasses when you get your ticket.
And is it free? I mean, do you have to pay extra for the glasses? Do you get to keep the glasses?
Well, you're supposed to recycle them. They have a bin outside the theater.
But some people, I'm sure, were keeping them.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure I'll see another 3D movie. 3D's coming back.
You know what? I'm so excited to see this.
3D glasses.
Did you keep them?
MBV 3D? What's that?
Did you keep the glasses?
Yeah, I did. I just said that.
Oh, okay.
You're paying attention.
I misunderstood. I apologize. So, why do you want to say that this is good?
Because My Bloody Valentine, the original.
Yeah. One of my favorite films.
In Nova Scotia. is a good movie.
Well, good-ish.
It's good. Come on.
Okay. All right. It's a good movie. I'll let you have that one.
And so you think, maybe I'm just naive, but you take a good movie and you remake it, and it'd be easy to remake a good movie as another good movie, but they found a way to make it stupid. Which really shouldn't surprise me. I mean, anyway.
Was anyone famous involved in making the film? Like, was it another one of those Platinum Dunes movies? Or was it, like, who made this one?
I don't know. I don't know. I can look it up. I really don't. I can't be bothered to do that.
Wow.
I have no idea. Nobody I recognize.
Okay, so you didn't recognize any of the names before the in the opening or ending credits.
Oh no! Oh, like people in the movie? Or
yeah.
The filmmakers.
No, the filmmakers.
Oh no.
Oh, okay.
But it's got Tom Atkins.
Tom Atkins.
Detective Thrill Me.
Detective Thrill Me. Oh my God, he's in this?
He's in it.
He's one of my all-time favorite actors. Who does he play?
Yeah, he's in this. He plays a retired sheriff.
Oh, the Don Franks role from the original.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, anyway. I mean, that sheriff wasn't retired,
not
but still.
He's retired.
But still, he's the sheriff in the movie, I assume.
Yeah.
That's great. I love Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Detective Thrill Me. He's the detective from Maniac Cop. He's, what else did he do? I'm sure he's been in something
in the
else.
Fog.
Oh, God, yeah. He's the lead in The Fog, Nick Castle.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I love Tom Atkins.
Anyway.
Sorry. Now I'm just thinking about Tom Atkins. He's in it.
But, okay, so the 3D is really cool.
It is.
Let's face it. 3D, it's a total gimmick,
yeah.
But it's really cool.
Okay.
And they work with it too, because you got things coming at you, and you're dodging out of the way when you're sitting in your seat. And the murder set pieces are quite something.
Are they really super gory?
Gory. It's extremely violent.
Wow.
Like remake Hills Have Eyes level of violence.
Oh my God. That
like,
was
is,
a
yeah,
nasty
like,
film.
Get, like, I know. So like, and I mean, I'm by no means a huge gore fiend.
Of course not.
But, you know, I like a gory, violent film. Sure.
It's, absolutely.
That's really what I'm paying to see. And it's a heart. I mean, it's rated R and it deserves the R.
That's fantastic.
They don't pull back. They don't pull their punches. So
wow.
for those reasons, it's good because it's got a cool gimmick and it really capitalizes on that. And it's, you know, it's extremely violent and gory. It's so freaking stupid.
No.
Really,
why did it
have to?
Why did it have to be stupid?
It is terribly written.
You got me
it's so bad.
You got me
it's
so
got, like,
excited.
A twist that's not a twist.
Oh.
Oh Jesus! It's really like it is. It's a bad film.
Really? Oh.
It is. So if you're going to, I mean, you should see it.
I'm definitely going to
see it. Again, because of the 3D. But, like, go to a matinee. A maple price.
Oh, you know what fascinates?
3-8-year-old student ID.
Now, I understand you had some confusion about this movie.
Oh. No. It wasn't just this movie.
Okay. Well.
Okay, one of the guys in the film.
Yeah.
That's just so stupid. One of the guys in the film, he's like really, really familiar to me, but I didn't see a name that I recognized in the opening credits, except for Tom Atkins, whose name I mispronounced earlier. and it took me all to put it together, but he was in an episode of Buffy, and he's on Supernatural.
He was in an episode of Buffy?
Yeah, he's in an episode of Buffy.
Which one?
I think he is. See, this is part of my confusion.
I can almost guarantee that he's
the
not.
The show Supernatural.
Okay.
The show Supernatural.
Which I do watch, so I should know what you're talking about. Okay.
One of whom is Jared Padalecki.
He's the one who was also on Gilmore Girls.
His hot brother. My friend refers to him as hot brother.
So he's the hot brother. Okay.
Hold on. So, and I have been going through life thinking Jared Padalecki is this one person, or in fact, it's someone else entirely. So the whole time I'm watching My Bloody Valentine, I'm like, really? That guy's not that hot. I mean, he's hot, but I've seen hotter. And I've actually seen an episode of Supernatural, and I always thought the other brother was hotter. So I disagreed with my friend's assessment, thinking Jared Padalecki was not, in fact, the hot one, when... I got really confused, and I don't know who Jared Padalecki is.
Wow.
All will be put to rest when Friday the 13th comes out.
Which is the big point I wanted to make about this film. The thing that fascinates me most about the movie My Bloody Valentine. Because of, you know, it is the Valentine's Day themed slasher film, right? The original, oh, was it still set in a town called Valentine Bluffs?
No, this is the other thing.
Why would they change that?
So much. I don't know. It's like, because, yeah, the original film is set in a town called Valentine Bluffs. And
yep.
It's a Valentine coal mine.
Yep. Well, no, it's still the Henniger coal mine.
Is it still the Henniger coal mine?
Yeah, it is. In fact,
whatever.
In the song
really
at the...
Important.
Wait,
the name
wait.
Of the town
are you
is
ready for this?
Valentine.
In the song at the end, they actually refer to the Henniger mine. It's great.
Oh,
at the end of the film,
God.
There's a song about the film. It's beautiful. But anyway... Continue,
all right, so I got
please.
That part wrong. Anyway,
okay.
The original is set in the town of Valentine Bluffs.
Yes.
And Harry Warden kills people on Valentine's Day.
Right.
So they stop having Valentine's dances in the. It's a very small town. They stop having Valentine's dances in the town because of the horrible tragedy. And so, like, years later, a group of people decide that they're going to have a Valentine's Day dance, even though it's forbidden.
Including Canadian celebrity. Oh, God, now I'm blanking on her name. One of the guys is Neil Affleck, beloved animation director who would go on to work on The Simpsons.
Oh,
in, like, one of
anyway.
His only film roles, acting.
Not really relevant.
I think it's curious. Please continue.
But in the remake, the town has got some other name, which I didn't bother to remember. It's still a Henniger coal mine.
Yeah.
But the only Valentine connection is that Harry Warden kills a bunch of people on Valentine's Day, even though you don't actually, it's not really made clear that it is in fact Valentine's Day.
So he doesn't, like, kill them at a Valentine's Day party?
Well, the thing is, okay, the remake begins, and you're assaulted with all these headlines about there's been an explosion in the mine, and these miners are trapped, and then one miner survives, and it's Harry Warden, and then you find out that Harry Warden, in fact, killed the other miners with him, so they wouldn't use up all the air.
Did they? Did he also cannibalize their bodies?
He might have, yes.
Because that's in the original, and it's the most disturbing frigging thing in the original.
He's taken off to hospital where he's
okay.
in a coma. And then he wakes up and kills the crap out of everybody on his ward. That was actually quite something. You don't see it happen, you just see the aftermath. Holy shit.
Wow. So, like, everyone responsible for the accident, he kills.
No. He kills everybody in the hospital.
Oh, on the ward.
And he returns
okay.
to the mine. Yeah. He returns to the mine, and people are having a party. And then he just kills everybody at the party. And then, but it's never made explicit that it's a Valentine's Day party, even though I think it's supposed to be.
Okay.
But maybe not. And then you fast forward to 10... Oh, then he's, like, shot at and chased. Then you fast forward to 10 years later... and the guy who's not Jared Padalecki,
Jensen Ackles,
shows up in town. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Shows up in town, to sell the mine. And this doesn't sit well with the townsfolk because the mine is really the only thing the town's got. And then the murders start again. So everybody thinks that Harry Warden is back.
But...
And then it is building up to Valentine's Day at this point. That
okay.
So...
It has twists that you don't have to give away, but, man,
well,
that's...
It's
pretty different.
I suppose it's a twist, but it's incredibly different.
Oh, okay.
It's a remake in name only, pretty much. The only thing that kept the same is Harry Warden, and the killer dresses like a miner and carries a big pickaxe.
And the Henniger Mine.
Yeah, so it's really, like...
It's different
it's
enough.
Like the things that happen in the film are so stupid. People make bad decisions. The girls, I shit you not, They trip over their own feet when they're running away. I saw this stupid trite crap. Oh, it just drives me crazy.
Oh, I hate that so much.
And then when you get to the end and you find out exactly what's going on, it actually makes no sense.
No! So
like, there
even,
are huge holes in that plot.
Even the big reveal at the end doesn't fix it. Oh.
Well, because you sort of see what's happening, and then you go home and you think about it, you're like, wait a minute.
No, wait, that didn't mean what they thought
really
it meant.
I don't think that... Well, no, it's like just the series of events, that's not... Like, how does that happen? How can he know this stuff that he know? And it's just like... Yeah.
Oh, so it just completely falls apart.
It totally falls apart. I mean, it's been like kind of been falling apart sort of since the 20-minute mark, and then.
Well, the thing that I find by far the most interesting about this entire My Bloody Valentine thing is. When I heard that there was a new My Bloody Valentine, I'm like, oh, so it'll open on Valentine's Day. But it's not. And I wondered,
no,
why could
January
this possibly be?
16th.
January 16th, the perfect time to open a Valentine's movie. But it's like, you know, when it's like Halloween H2O coming this July. What?
Yeah. Like that. The fake trailer for that Thanksgiving Day movie opening, and that one opens on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, opening Valentine's Day. See, like, this is what I have a problem with. And then I find out that the thing about Valentine's Day this year is it's a Saturday, which means the Friday is a Friday the 13th.
It's Friday the 13th.
Which means as of right now, we are only, what, 3.5 weeks away from a new Friday the 13th movie.
Not long now, that's right.
Incredibly confusingly, starring the other brother from Supernatural.
who I think is the hot one.
Okay, so you think Jared Padalecki is the hot one, and Jensen Ackles isn't.
Well, I mean, he's hot too, but he's less hot than Jared Padalecki, so...
I am learning
a
lot
wrong.
Of things today.
My friend was right.
Okay.
Jared Padalecki's hot. Which I knew all the whole time. I just didn't know which was which.
Do you want to hear yet another weird coincidence? Like, just a bizarre one?
Sure.
Guess who My Bloody Valentine 3D was written by?
Who?
Todd Farmer.
Know. Who is?
The writer of Jason X. Largely believed to be the worst Friday the 13th movie.
Oh, no!
I know! He also wrote The Messengers, which I've never seen, and apparently The Messengers 2. Although I hear The Messengers is terrible.
What was I watching the other day? I watched two Steve Meyer films back-to-back, and I was actually really surprised to find out about that.
Really?
What were they? Well, one of them was Warlock, obviously.
Of course. It's always Warlock with you. Oh, apparently the writer also
really
played Frank the Trucker in My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Frank the Trucker.
Yeah, apparently. I'm sure it was a one-line cameo.
Well, the only trucker I can think of gets killed.
Probably him.
It's a longer scene. Maybe it's him. Wow, he gets to be on screen with a naked chick.
Oh, there's a naked chick?
There's a naked chick. Yeah.
I'm so happy.
She's naked for like a good long time.
Well, good for her.
Totally nude. No, she wears shoes.
Oh, well, of course. You don't want to be running around barefoot when I assume you're running away from a monster. Was it House?
But that's the only nudity in the entire movie.
Really?
It's one naked chick. Yeah.
That's so strange. Was it Lake Placid? The Steve Miner movie.
What?
Like, what's the other Steve Miner movie?
I don't know. Keep naming Steve Miner
Soul Man.
Maybe I'll come up with it.
House.
No. No.
Neither of the Friday the 13th, obviously. Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. What?
It
What is that?
Wait. It might have been Friday, too.
Oh, well.
I watched that the other night.
Oh, see, I couldn't imagine that you would have been confused by that.
There we go.
He famously directed part 2 and 3, so I don't know why you would have even been confused by that. Okay.
Mystery solved. I don't know why that was so difficult for me to remember.
Well, speaking of which, I think this is a good time to announce what we're doing for the new Friday the 13th movie.
That's right. That's right. The week before Friday the 13th premieres, we're going to have a whole show devoted to Friday.
Yeah.
So the Count and I are going to watch all the Fridays and then talk about them.
Yeah. And that AVOD is going to be going up on Thursday the 12th of February, one day before the new Friday the 13th film opens, so that you can listen to it at work that day or while waiting in line for the new Friday the 13th. We just want to get you ready and psyched and pumped for the new Friday the 13th movie. And then
The
Dive Mistress and I are going to go see the movie opening night. And then the very next day, we'll be recording a special all Friday the 13th AVOD, which will probably largely be me complaining about the new Friday the 13th movie.
Again.
Again.
Times ahead.
You know, I can't guarantee I'm going to hate it. I have no reason to believe I'm going to hate it, except that I hated the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it's by the same producer and director.
I know.
But well, you know,
I saw a trailer for it, went to go see MBV.
Please keep calling it MBV. Please do that.
Why not?
No, there's no reason not to.
Okay.
Please do it.
Exactly. And they had a trailer for Friday the 13th, but it gave away, it gave away everything.
Don't tell me. Don't tell me anything.
Every kill.
I know nothing about the movie.
I'm just gonna set the bar low for this one. I sort of try and keep that as a general rule for myself.
You know, it's very hard for us to get our audience excited about our Friday the 13th podcast when we now have spent, you know, a minute and a half talking about what a downer the movie is probably going to be.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It's going to suck.
You don't want to miss a minute of it.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't care. I feel about the new Friday the 13th movie the way I feel about there being a new Star Trek movie, you know? I don't care if it sucks. I'm going. It's a Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah. Although I'm not going to go see that new Star Trek movie.
You're not?
Baby Star Trek.
Yeah. No. Teen Star Trek, really.
When have I ever been a big Star Trek fan?
Yeah, and teen Star Trek isn't the kind of thing to get butts in the seats, is it? And I hate J.J. Abrams, so you put those things together. And you have a pretty persuasive argument for not going to see the film. But I'm going anyway. I don't care. I'm not, you know, discerning when it comes...
You don't know any better.
I'm just... I'll be honest. I'm not discerning when it comes to Star Trek. I'm not. You know, I admit that. I'll cop to it. Okay.
As long as you're comfortable.
As long as I'm comfortable with my huge mental problems. Okay. So I think that covers the AVOD for today.
I think so.
Do we have any other business to address?
Any unfinished business? I don't think so.
No, seriously,
yeah, we've
though.
Gone everything on the list.
Tune in next week for our Dark Place special, and the week after that for Who the Hell Knows What. And then our big 2-week Jason Stravaganza starts on, you know what, I'm going to pull up a calendar so I can actually give the date. Our big 2-week Jason Stravaganza starts Thursday, February 12th. So even if you miss Dark Place in the next week, be back for that. I may be the world's worst salesman. I think that's entirely possible, isn't it?
Really? Well, Star Trek stuff at the end. Nobody needs to hear us complain about Star Trek.
You know, we actually haven't finished the AVOD yet.
Oh, yeah. I thought we were done.
Yeah, I'm leaving this in. All right. Once again, thank you all for listening. Thank you to our fan for listening. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. And as ever, you can learn a little more about both of your hosts at their respective blogs, Vargelon.blogspot.com,
Vamborgs.blogspot.com, or Zombots.blogspot.com.
And
as always, you can visit the AVOD at theavod.blogspot.com.
And if you have any questions, comments, or just want to hear words you've written read by a different person on an AVOD, then please feel free to send us some email over at theavod@gmail.com.
We look forward to hearing from you and wish you a pleasant evening.